Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olifier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. And welcome back to Divine Intervention. Great to chat to you again this evening. Great to chat to you with a glass of red in my hand. But before I introduce the wine, down we go to the Cape, where we're joined by our food and wine guru, Eat Out's Lifetime Achievement Award recipient for his service to food and wine. And I think he's served himself a glass of wine this evening. Michael Olifier, great to chat to you.
John, hello. Nice to be with you again.
Well, it's always a treat to talk to you, Michael, because I don't think there are many people in this country with such an encyclopedic knowledge of the wine industry who are willing to share it with such generosity. So great to chat to you. With me in the studio, I have two guests. You may remember them from last week's Divine Intervention podcast. To my immediate left, we have Jeremy Sampson, who heads Interbrand Sampson, one of South Africa's leading branding operations. He would probably argue it's the leading branding operation. Jeremy, good evening.
John, I wouldn't argue with you, but hello, Michael.
Hi.
And just the other side of Jeremy, we have, once again, from Absa Investments, somebody who's well known to the investment community, but is also known for a love of life, Chris Gilmore.
Thank you, John. I'd just like to say it's the only branding operation. There we go.
Thank you. Your check is in the post and Jeremy's signing it. Okay, we've introduced the guest, we've introduced the guru, now to introduce the wine. A slightly long tongue twister for those who aren't entirely au fait with the Afrikaans language. It's from Al Tait Gedacht. It's a Pinotage. It's 2011. Michael Olifier, talk us through Al Tait Gedacht. Talk us through this Pinotage.
John, this is... Al Tait Gedacht was a farm that actually bordered on my parents' farm, so I know that area really, really well. They do a great Pinotage. What they do is they handpick, they take the grapes into the cellar, they cold soak for about 3 days before they inoculate with the yeast. And then what happens is during that fermentation, the skins and the mash rises up to the top and forms a cap on top, which effectively seals off the wine from oxygen. But then what they do is they pump from the bottom the juice over the cap twice a day. And what that does is that builds flavor and color. They sometimes use open fermenters as well, and then they punch down that cap with a thing that looks like a broom with no spikes on it, usually about every 4 hours or so. Then once the wine is fermented, it goes into oak barrels, and they use a 20% American oak. American oak gives a much more sort of vanillary, sweet perception to the wine. 40% of the barrels are new, and the others are second and third for 13 months altogether. And this is a for me certainly a typical expression of a cool climate. Pinotage, lovely fruit. I mean, the fruit there is just massive, and it's got that sort of slight raspberry note there, which I quite like, which comes from the Pinot Noir parent of the grape. And then, of course, you've got the lovely oak from the barrels, and there's just a little thread of coconut going through there as well, which is from the American oak. Nice silky palate, soft tannins, and really a lovely, lovely mouthful, and that nice lingering aftertaste.
My one criticism of this, Michael, is to me this seems just a little bit too young. You sniff on it, and all sorts of stuff climb up your nostrils and overwhelm you. Is this just me being difficult, or might this merit a few more years in the bottle?
Oh, it will certainly merit a few more years in the bottle. Absolutely. You know, if you can delay the pleasure, then I think it's always a good thing with a red wine. Because, I mean, a wine like this will go 8 to 10 years after vintage quite happily.
I also, a lot of people tend to connect Pinotage with chocolate. I'm getting a little bit of that in this.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, that it depends on how toasted the barrels are. Because if you're sort of medium toasting or medium to heavy toasting, you're going to get that sort of chocolatey, sort of English toffee kind of undertone.
Jeremy Sampson, what are your views on the Altet Gedacht 2011 Pinotage?
Well, again, John, it's a label that I know. It's a name that I know but can't pronounce. But I don't think I've ever tasted it before. And Michael talks about delaying the pleasure. I have to say that the wine we're drinking at the moment is slightly chilled, which on a hot day and a hot evening is perfect. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I'm finding it incredibly drinkable. I'm glad you pointed out the overtones of vanilla there, which I'm now detecting as well. But I'm finding it very enjoyable, very nice, and I'll certainly go out and buy this in future.
Well, we've got one sale. Chris Gilmore.
This is lovely. You know, I'm not usually a Pinotage fan, but, you know, listen to the way Michael was describing this. It's exactly what you pick up, particularly that raspberry. I mean, that is so apparent. This is just a lovely, lovely wine, and it hits you very, very immediately. John, I take your point. I suspect a little bit of mellowing over the years might not go astray. But this is a really lovely, this is a classic wine, very complex, lovely.
Michael, as you know, we have quite a few people who listen in to Divine Intervention from all parts of the world where Pinotage might not be on their radar screen in the same way that our South African listeners will know Pinotage. Yes. Just remind them what this grape is or this fusion of grape varieties.
Well, this is a crossing of a Pinot Noir and a grape then called Hermitage. This is in the 1920s. That grape is now called Cinsault. So you have Pinot Noir and Hermitage, Pinotage. And what Professor Abraham Perrol of Stellenbosch University was trying to do, he was trying to achieve the nobility of the Pinot Noir and the sort of perhaps slightly more heavy bearing ability of the Cinsault, and he developed this grape, and for years, I mean, like 30 years or more, nothing happened. And quite an interesting story, because Charlie Niehaus, who was a winemaker at KWV, on his bicycle went past Perrol's house one day, and Perrol had just been given a new job, and he was moved out of the house, and there were a whole lot of workers there, and he said, I wonder what happened to those Pinotage vines. And he went around the back and they were sort of ripping up the garden. And he sort of grabbed a couple of cuttings and put them in his pocket. And the entire South African wine industry comes from those cuttings that Charlie Niehaus put in his pocket and rode off on his bicycle with. And then it was the Morkels of Bellevue who provided the grapes for the 1959 vintage of Pinotage, which was bottled under the name of Lanzerac Pinotage and won medals on the 1961 Cape Wine Show.
I can't say I was there, Michael, but I was there in spirit. Jeremy Sampson, just going back to the Pinotage, fairly uniquely South African, I think the New Zealanders and there are a few other producers on a very small scale. Are we exploiting Pinotage? Are we marketing and branding Pinotage as maybe the potential flagship of the South African wine industry?
John, very interesting question, because as you say, Pinotage, I think, is fairly unique to South Africa. As Michael says, Mr. Perrold and KWV have now got a label, I believe, called the Perrold, made Pinotage, as it were, fairly famous. I think it's had a very bad press in many areas, and they had the burnt tires and that sort of thing, which I think is very unfair. I get a bit worried as well with the guys who go into the coffee area. I must say, a couple of years ago, I went to Demas Fontaine and I stayed there, and I believe they are meant to be the sort of main people who started the coffee cult, if I can call it that. And I didn't enjoy it at all, whereas this particular wine I'm thoroughly enjoying. It's very different, it's very fresh, and it's very, very drinkable.
Chris, your views on branding, marketing, making money for South Africa by using Pinotage, can it assume that role, or should it just be part of a basket of varietals?
Look, I think it can. When I first came to this country over 30 years ago, Pinotage in those days was actually quite high up. Okay, very different times, but it was well recognized, particularly amongst people who actually drank wine. And I think over the years, unfortunately, it's kind of fallen behind. And we perhaps lost that sense of of self-image. And perhaps it's now time to start promoting Pinotage again, because, as I say, look, I've never been that wild about it. I much prefer a Cabernet Sauvignon, for example. Sorry, yeah, a Cabernet Sauvignon. I'm getting a bit confused here. But this, I think, has got so many lovely, unique characteristics that this is a particularly nice one. Yeah, I think it's perhaps time that branding gurus like Jeremy Sampson here gave his input here and give some information as to how we can actually do that.
Okay, well, before we go this evening, Michael, normally I ask you at the beginning of a tasting what you would pair in terms of the food and wine pairing with a particular wine. What would go well with this particular Pinotage?
I was just thinking, I'm sure even that question is going to come up. I often feel that Pinotage and pork work quite well together because of that sort of almost sort of raspberry acidity that Pinotage has. So the other day we took some ribs of pork and just olive oil and sea salt and pepper, and then cooked them for about 4 hours at 140. Took them out, brushed some apricot marinade onto them and put them onto the grill. They were absolutely wonderful. And we just cut them up into little strips. We actually had a Pinotage with them and it was a perfect combination.
And Michael, when you're dining with your wife, are you the one who gets the spare rib?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Jeremy Sampson, same question. I think I've already indicated that this may not be a wine I would enjoy drinking in great quantities on its own, but I can see it as a pairing with all sorts of meat, maybe poultry as well. Well, what are your thoughts?
John, I think this is a wine which actually would go with most things. Now, even with chicken or white meats or whatever, it's very light, it's very quaffable, and as I say, slightly chilled, it's absolutely gorgeous. I want to ask Michael a question there, because he mentioned Cinsault just now, and Cinsault seems to be something that's coming back into fashion. I'm reading in some of the blogs that Cinsault is back. Could you advise me on that?
Yeah, I hope it will come back. Half of my father's farm was planted to Cinsault, and there's some pretty exciting Cinsaults out there. Particularly the Swartland are doing some great stuff. And Lanskron has a lovely Cinsault as well. It's a really nice, rustic, no-nonsense, easy-to-drink wine with sort of fleshy and really crisp and fresh and a stunner of the wine.
Well, I don't think you can ever get enough sin. So, on to Chris Gilmore. Chris, were you pairing this Pinotage with something? What might you enjoy chomping away at while slurping on the Altate Gedacht 2011 Pinotage?
Well, unlike a cheeky little Sauvignon Blanc, I would this I couldn't really whack out more than about a bottle at a go. But I think the pairings with food are actually probably more critical in this regard. And as Jeremy was saying, I think it's remarkably versatile. You could drink this with just about anything.
And finally, Michael, as somebody who is multilingual in terms of understanding what this label actually means. What does Altate Gedacht mean?
I would think, it's obviously a Dutch word, but Altate Gedacht, I would think it's something like always in my thoughts.
As indeed you are in mine whenever I uncork a bottle of wine. Great chatting to you again on Divine Intervention. Michael Olivier, our food and wine guru, thank you for talking us through Pinotage, through the Dutch language, and through so much more. We look forward to chatting to you again next week.
Cheeky bugger.
And talking of cheeky buggers, many thanks to our studio guest this evening, Jeremy Sampson. Great to chat to you again.
Cheeky bugger number one.
And to Chris Gilmore.
Yes, well, I'll desist from making any comments along those lines.
And last but not least, many thanks to Malcolm McDonald for giving us the technological insight to make this podcast recording a lot more coherent than it would have been if I'd have been in charge. This has been Divine Intervention. I'm John Fraser. Chat to you next week.